一度だけの恋なら君の中で遊ぼう、わがままなキスをしよう。
It's June 12th. The Speaker Podcast crew is back for another GER Talk. Episode 11 of Macross Delta has just finished airing. We're here in Tokyo, and we are here to pay our respects to the late Messer. And with me doing so on my left is...
Adrian Lozano. And if there's no body, there's nobody who's dead.
And we also have...
Egan Liu, and I'm still trying to process.
And, I know, Renato, I believe you're here. Are you processing?
Yeah, I'm processing.
Okay. And on the other side of the pond, who have we got?
Hey, this is Mike Aguirre, and Adrian beat me to it. No body, no death.
Ooh, a bit of positivity.
No money, no problems.
Wow.
No meat, no life.
Is that wow, no nice. Music, no life? Well, that's Tower Records. Well, and before we get into it, the usual disclaimers. We are doing this raw. We don't have time to wait for no subs. We want to get in on this now at the ground level. There will be spoilers, spoilers galore, if the opening didn't give a major spoiler away already. So, gentlemen, we're here for what was a bit of a change in pace this episode. The first half was pretty much a lot of plot building, building up things that are to come. And the second half was basically a wake for Messer. There was no huge real, you know, action scenes, although there was a bit of a stinger in the post credits. It was, as I was saying, half build up, half tearjerker. Obviously, the second half of this episode was really built to wring the most out of what happened last episode, right? And it doesn't beat around the bush. We open up pre-credits straight to Messer's funeral. No, you know, they're not trying to hide the issue that the man is dead. They're pretty upfront about it. And the entire color palette of the show is noticeable immediately. Adrian, you know, so I know that it was a lot more subdued.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very dark gray colors. Sky was really cloudy and gray. It was just that really... really sad setting kind of thing, right. Which hasn't really been done in the show. Everything's always been bright and colorful, sunny days, or snow.
Yeah, Ragnar is really... the whole thing that's made Ragnar stand out is how colorful and beach resort-like the color palette is.
It was striking how when we went from that sequence directly to the opening, it was like a splash of color after all that somber tones before it.
Yeah. And the bulk of, the first half of the episode, every scene you see in Ragnar, it's pretty much raining as well. Mm. So the planet weeps, the planet grieves over the loss of Messer, as do all the fangirls who have been posting unbelievable amounts of fan art over the last week. Fan art, cosplay... long blog posts. The outpouring over Messer has been pretty huge. I mean, Mike, Renato, have you guys witnessed much of this?
No. Well, I've been out of the country, so I haven't really... I literally just got back last night.
I must admit, Renato, I didn't actually know if you were going to call in or not, so yeah, I'm glad you're back. Mike, have you been seeing much of this, or the fan art and stuff that's been going on?
Well, thankfully, I follow this really annoying guy at Gwyn Campbell on Twitter, and he reposts pretty much anything Macross related, especially Macross Delta. But a simple search of the hashtag Macross Delta, either fully spelled out or Macross Delta with the actual Delta symbol, and you could pretty much see all the art online, all the... There's even been some if you're into the whole morbid humor thing, there's been some funny memes. Gwyn, you posted one that I thought was pretty great. It was Messer and Kaname,
mm-hmm.
But then if you click on it, it's like a GIF.
Yeah.
So it looks like Messer and Kaname, but if you click on it, Kaname disappears and it's just the Grim Reaper embracing Messer. I thought that was great.
It was really good. I've never seen a Twitter picture do that before.
Yeah, that was really cool.
But
yes, obviously, I mean, the planet weeps for Messer, as do we all.
Indeed.
And I will say, we'll get to it, but at the end of the episode, I some of it's either chopping onions in my house or there's some dust or something.
You know, the best piece of the best humorous piece of fan art I saw, of course, was because it was Kaname's birthday last week as well, right? Talk about terrible timing. You've got to wonder if they planned all this, because, you know, the character birthdays were announced back when the profiles were released back in February, right? Before the show even aired. And there was this little, like, four-panel strip of... It wasn't even four panels. Of her having... It was a strawberry birthday cake. At first, I thought it was Om Rice, but it was a strawberry birthday cake. And Mess is there with this huge tube of strawberry jam or strawberry sauce, just overdoing it entirely so it looked like the inside of his cockpit. But, speaking of which...
But that's fan art, though, right? You're talking about fan art.
Yeah, this is all fan art, yeah.
Okay, well, since it was her birthday officially the other day, and since we know that they've all got their Twitter accounts, did they say anything?
Did
they tweet?
Are those character accounts official? I've never really been clear on that. Because I know the Freya one says it isn't.
Really? I thought they were.
I don't know. I'm not... I don't think...
The whole thing is falling apart now.
Well, you should check up on that. Go and read some profiles and get back to us next week. That's your homework, Renata. But look, speaking of cockpits, I'll just skip ahead briefly. We get to see a shot of the shot in Mess's cockpit, and we find out that the shot fired by Keith went straight through the canopy, straight through not only him, but exactly where his heart would be. And Hayate thinks it was done on purpose. That Keith was aiming. That was his goal.
Heart and soul. Heart and soul.
Well, there's only soul left after that shot, but...
Well, I'm just sitting here going, on purpose, really.
That's what he thinks, yeah. He seems to think it was...
Not, they're inhuman. No one could possibly do that, well, except for Wendemirians.
Yeah, he seems to think it was on purpose. We also see Freya being analyzed, going under an analysis to try to get to the bottom of what exactly happened last episode when, you know, she resonated with the protoculture ruins. And interestingly enough, it seems that she was the main one resonating with them, and that Mikomor kind of piggybacked on that signal, so none of the other members of Waokure had the ability to resonate with the ruins at all. But Freya seemed to be doing the main resonating and pushing back on Heinz's power. But Mikomor had the power to kind of piggyback on her. So she can't activate it herself, but she can kind of get in on the action. And they were trying to work out what it was that they could see and how they were able to interact with the protoculture ruins. In the meantime, Keith is back at base. Bogue manages to piss him off somewhat by suggesting, well, of course he managed to shoot that guy down. Like, you know, he doesn't get the wind going. You know, he's not even, you know, fit to be at your feet. And Keith is actually quite put out by this and has a go at Bogue, which everyone wants to see, you know, because it's Bogue. But, you know, he accuses Bogue of not being as good of a pilot, really, as Mesa, essentially.
Was it towards the end of that exchange, one of the other people said, "You're ruined."
Yeah, Bogue was annoyed and his rune was going off again.
Yeah.
Which could mean something else. Who knows? Right. Yeah.
So then we find Arad back at base looking over potential replacement members for Mesa already. Again, something that seems to be common in Delta. And guys, if anyone has any thoughts on this, I'd be happy to hear them. I find that it never beats around the bush in dealing with the consequences of what's happened the previous episode, you know. I mean, I remember when they discovered the link between the apples and the water, the very next episode, well, we've stopped all shipments, we've found dummy companies behind them, we've put an end to it. This time around, we had all this stuff happen last episode, and there's boom, funeral, boom, we're analyzing Freya to get to the bottom of this, boom, we're trying to find a replacement pilot. There is no messing around.
To be fair, even Hayate was, whoa, we're talking about his replacement so soon and everything else. So there was a little bit of pushback on that, you know, how fast things are going. But then they also emphasized why they needed to.
Yeah, they were looking at pilots in alpha and beta teams and didn't decide on anyone right there. In the meantime, and this is a big info dump, I think the first half of this episode was all about the info dumps, and the second half was, as Adrian would say, all about the feels. And The other.
Excuse me?
I know you love that word.
I don't use Would he say that word?
Yeah, when has he ever said that?
That's the point.
And I don't goth dance either.
I was just going to say that.
Interestingly enough, by the way, we find out that the loss of Messer apparently means the fighting effectiveness of Delta is down by 37%. One man down, 37%. Talk about carrying the team on your shoulders.
Makes you wonder about Ara, how much he carries.
Probably, you know, at least 20, 25. And then what's Chuck doing? A two? I don't know.
Well, he carries the girl, so.
Yeah, I guess. He's there to... He's the mood maker, that's right. Yeah,
oh, there you go.
Doesn't have to be effective.
Well, I mean, it's interesting to point out that, you know, back at the beginning episodes, they called Mirage, like, the little greenhorn or whatever. So, I mean, she's relatively new to the team as well, so...
Right.
I mean, Chuck actually is probably a little bit more experienced than Mirage or obviously Hayate as well.
But his submarine attack never connects, Mike.
Yes, but he hasn't been shot down yet, has he?
That's true. It's because he's never in the thick of things.
He's a good utility player, yeah.
Yeah, he's a support class, you know. He sits back and throws the items out for everyone else. So...
Literally, actually.
Pretty much. We jump to Windermere, and we get finally the reveal of the big plan, and we get the first hints of it, at least. And that is the same guy from last episode is there. What was his name? Berger, I think it was?
Stelberger. Berger.
Stone, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he was saying that this artifact that's been dug up was, I think, at 60% recovery and could now be activated. And the king seemed to react pretty strongly to that. And the king's motivation now is basically, look, we didn't know Valkyrie had this amount of power, this amount of ability to interfere with things. The fact is they pushed back against Hinds. They've effective Hinds. He could see what they saw. It looks like Hinds may have actually seen inside of Freya's memories because he saw destruction and flames. He may have seen Freya's memories inside of her head. He's like, look, if they can interfere to that extent... then all bets are off. We're going in. We're going all out. You know, everyone on deck, we are attacking now. We are using this mysterious artifact that is now activated, which gets revealed later on. And then we jump back, of course, there's a lot of back and forth here, to the Elysian, and we find out that the song last episode that was boosted by the ruins was not only heard on each planet in the sector with protoculture ruins, it was also heard on all the planets without the ruins. And what it is that these protoculture ruin planets manage to connect to form an overlapping field, which overlaps ostensibly about 80% of the sector, meaning that with the protoculture ruin booster, or whatever it's called, Windermere can basically mind control 80% of the space in this area, and all the planets are basically in that space. So it's obvious this is what they're planning. They control most of the planets with these ruins, and this is obviously their greater plan. They're going to win the sector, take it over, by basically mind controlling everyone in this manner.
But didn't they point out that Ragna and Al-Shahal was just out of the reach or something like that? I wasn't...
Those are the only two that have not yet been occupied Windermere. So get one of those or get both of them. Right. You complete the plan.
So last episode, or was it one before, Johnson pointed out that they requested reinforcements from Lady M. And that was mentioned again this episode, that they put together that this was obviously the plan. Once they take over, Al-Shahal and Ragna, that's it. They can basically take over the entire, quadrant as long as they've got Hinds.
The cluster, yeah.
And so, again, it's pointed out that they've asked Lady M for help again, and they just don't know if the reinforcements will arrive in time.
Yeah. And when they arrive, you're going to see the Battle 7 come in and Max say, "Let's go, kittens."
But, and then we do find out what this artifact is, this protoculture artifact that's been dug up. It is, in fact, a Thunderbird's base.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. Thunderbirds and like Mazinger Z and all these things cross together.
It's just this huge ship, which looks, I could be proven wrong, a bit like a Thomas Romain design.
I thought it was a Miyatake design.
Really?
Yeah. You have to look through the credits, guys. Let's see what he was listed.
I tend not to speak until I know for sure.
Well, you can say what you thought it looked like. I'm just saying what I thought it looked like.
Well, I rolled my eyes when I heard Thomas Romain.
I know, because this...
Why isn't this a visual podcast?
Well, knowing his
work... We need the eye-rolling.
Knowing his work on Space Dandy, just...
Nothing looks like this.
No, this is an entirely different aesthetic. Far... Shut up. Far more detailed, but just, I don't know, the proportions and just the general form factor. But hey, if it's a Miyatake design, I'd be very happy.
It could be both. There's been times before where Miyatake hands over his design to be redone by someone else, or vice versa.
Well, we should check the credits before the podcast finishes.
Oh, maybe. But
We know that Miyatake was going to design something for this, because if you go back to our old podcast, where we had the talk event at Liner Notes, he mentioned it.
He did.
Yep, that's what I was going to reference as well. And it's either probably something he turned in, and obviously it was most likely penned by Tengen, because it is a still image that was moving and not a 3D graphic.
Right, yeah.
Interesting. Well, we'll check those credits. But either way, it was a big-ass ship. Yeah. I don't know, guys, it's supposed to be a protoculture ship. Did it scream protoculture to you? I mean, some of the highlighted markings on it, the lit up areas kind of reminded me of protoculture stuff, but overall it seemed to be relatively a new kind of design.
To me, it resembled the protoculture city and just the vehicle that would have been in this, that they would have used. Yeah, like a ship, not a vehicle, but right. It just had the same kind of contours and kind of goes in, goes out, and
yeah, and I'm looking at it right now, and it looks it has some of the, especially the ruins that they showed on Al Shahal, because you know Al Shahal is like that desert type planet, and then the ruins that they showed had like the purple gems and stuff like that, and it looks very very similar to that. The same like rounded edges and all that stuff.
Either in this exchange or towards the end during the sting. Either in this exchange or towards the end during the stinger, they made the point of saying they resurrected something. So, whether we're talking about something mechanical or something more biological in nature, we'll see.
Right. So after the Thunderbirds, we shift to the second half of the episode, which is basically Mess's wake, and this was a really nice touch. It was maximized for pulling the heartstrings. It went a lot quicker than I thought it would, considering it was practically half the episode. It was really over before you knew it. In fact, when we hit the credits, I was like, wait, that's it? Of course, it turns out there was a little bit of a stinger after the credits, so it probably was a little shorter than normal for that second half. So we find out that in Ragnan culture, apparently the spirits, you know, return to the sea as jellyfish. And then Reyna makes an interesting point that, you know, she can't eat jellyfish whole anymore now because they're sending Messa's spirit off. So she might be eating Messa.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Don't make a mess of your food.
You had to go there, didn't you, Renata?
I was waiting.
You're the one who said... Well,
now we know what playing inside you means.
Yes.
It's about everyone being jellyfish.
Yes.
And Arad breaks out.
I feel jelly in my belly. Oh,
God.
Arad breaks out what I've been waiting for 11 episodes. Ever since the preview version got edited, the most important line, and that was, when you have jellyfish, you have banana sake. And that's they cut that out of the broadcast version. And this time around, here we go, banana sake. Big ass, what is it? Ceramic jug of it. I wonder what that stuff tastes like.
It was the same. Was it the same sake that he was having with the captain back?
I don't think so. It's like a 20-year-old.
Oh, right. They made a specific point that it was 20-year-old.
Really
banana
expensive
sake.
Banana sake. Yeah. The kids, was it Zuck and Huck? The brothers?
Zuck and Huck.
I say Zack and Hack.
That's good for you, Mike. I say Zuck and Huck. Katakana's not your friend or anyone's. But they break out with an acoustic rendition of Remember 16, which is very much in line with their Firebomber fandom. Renato, I guess, like everyone else, you picked up on those on the first couple of chords, because the minute I heard those first two chords,
Actually, like, yeah. I was thinking, that sounds like... Is it? Could it be? Here we go.
Especially since it was done acoustically. This is probably the best way that song was done, even in Macross 7.
Right. Yeah, I mean, when Fukuyama does it live, it's usually just the acoustic version now.
Yeah. It kind of hits home better that way, I think.
Yeah.
So everyone's, you know, reminiscing and you know, expressing how they all feel blame in their own way for what happened to Messer. Of all things, I thought Freya was the most interesting in that little moment she had with Messer a couple of episodes back when she told him she dealt with her short lifespan by just living for the moment and that you shouldn't, you know, that's all she's got time to deal with. And he kind of seemed to take that on board. She kind of now blames herself for telling him that, thinking that, you know, maybe he took it to heart too much and then acted too rashly, which, you know, I don't think he did, but it was an interesting turnabout on what had previously been a very positive scene. And one of the mechanics turns up a log from Messer's... Was it in his plane? I feel like they found his plane or in his room.
No, he was typing it up, but...
Right.
They said they were going to his... Things,
stuff,
right?
Right?
Yeah.
And it had a bunch of notes he'd taken on all the members of Delta's progress during training, and showed that he really did care about their development. And you know, earlier on he had said, you know, he wanted them all to train because he didn't want them to die. Of course, now thinking back, he obviously didn't want them to die if he went nuts and lost control. And Arad points out that he cared for everyone, but he didn't want to get too close because everyone would be too emotionally attached if they had to take him down if he lost it. So he distanced himself on purpose. Hence, you know, avoiding the dinners, going back to the dorm by himself, not going to the festival of his own accord. All of that all kind of tied in and made sense, which was a nice touch, you know,
and all the more heartbreaking to hear about.
Right.
Yeah, plus they did the whole trope of, I mean, this happens in any kind of drama, not just anime, where the person's dead, but then, like, a letter is revealed, or, like, a video message, or, like, a voicemail, something. And so that was, like, everybody's final chance to say goodbye to Messer, because it was his little, you know, it was him reading his notes, and you saw a little nice little animation shot of him typing it up on his computer. So
and it gave
just one. One more stab in the heart for everybody.
It gave them an excuse to bring the voice actor back one last time, at least.
One last time, yeah.
Unless they do a flashback episode, of course. And
Unless he's not dead.
Shot through the heart, Mike.
and you're to blame.
I was waiting for you. I knew you were going to be over there.
I didn't say that because I knew Renato would do it. That was brilliant.
Well, thank you in that case.
Actually, and Keith is to blame, right?
Well,
shut through the heart, and Keith's to blame, baby.
There it is.
Wind, a bad name.
Yes, thank you, Renato.
Hayate comes to the conclusion that he is going to. They don't need no substitute pilot. He's going to cover Messer's.
I don't need no subs.
Okay, that was pushing it. That was a stretch.
Which. When he
set him
that,
up and Renato knocks him down.
He does. When he said that, I pretty much just was a big like, yeah, fat chance he's going to be that good. I think Hayate's got another thing coming if he thinks he can step up to do that.
Well, no, because remember, he rode the wind in the last episode. Or the previous one.
Yeah, but being able to shoot bows down.
His Valkyrie glowing.
I don't know, Shingdao Bo gets a whole different thing to Shingdao Keith.
I mean, that's the thing. That's what the ride in the wind is, right? This is my theory. Superpowers. Because that's what Alto did at the end of Sayonara and Tsubasa. His Valkyrie started glowing yellow, and he had the yellow trails and stuff. And that's what Keith does every time he goes hyper. His Valkyrie glows yellow, and then Hayata's done it a couple of times.
Right, it's basically the super attack from the PSP games, right?
Yes, basically. What do they call it? The SP gauge. Yeah, the SP gauge is full.
It's like there's a left bumper and a right bumper in the Valkyrie cockpit, and you hit them both together and it activates. Yeah. But I hope they don't overuse that, really, because it is a little, you know, Super Saiyan-ish. I don't want to say over the top, because it's just different. It takes the action choreography to a different place. In a way.
Yeah, a better place.
Well, it's if it's not a place where everyone can participate, then it's just different, I guess.
I know, but that's what I was feeling like when Frontier started. Like at first, when they started talking about fold waves and stuff, I was like, well, that's not what singing is about. I thought in Macross, singing was just like, you got to have soul, you got to have passion, and the more passion you have, the higher your spiritual gauge is going to be or whatever. But then they said, no, what's their name? Cheryl and Ranka. Cheryl and Ranka can produce these fold waves and stuff because they've got this special, like Cheryl has a fold wave stone in her earring and the other one's got them in her belly or something. So, I mean, that's what that is for singing, right? And this is what it is for Valkyrie Control. So now they're combining that. I think that's where we're going.
Can I interrupt the flow of this entirely to say I'm eating crow right now because we've just paused the credits and Miyatake has... No, that's not Miyatake. Who am I
talking
about?
That's Miyazaki, Shinichi.
Who is that?
Good question.
Okay.
Yoshikawa.
Sorry, I was jumping the gun. I'm looking at design credits trying to find Miyatake's name. I saw a Mia and I jumped the gun. Let me see.
What's he credited for?
Oh, it's just a general design. It's not Miyatake, though. Well, not seeing anyone at all.
To be fair, to get back to the topic about the science of music and how sound waves and everything else, yeah. Even Macross 7 was talking about how there was only a certain people who can be the anima spiritua. And then now we know Hayate has a fold receptor, so we're getting a little bit of that in both Macross 7, Macross Delta, just as we did in Macross Frontier.
Yeah, I guess so.
All right, just skimming the credits, not seeing who I think this ship was done by. Oh, there's monitor graphics.
Oh, that was from before, yeah. That's usually the people who do the funky, you know, online graphics in English and pseudo-English and Photoshop README files.
Interesting. Anyways. But yeah, no, look, Renato, I do see where you're coming from. I'm just like, if it's the instant fallback for when any you know, major emotional big Valkyrie fight happens, it could be a... Like, I want it used in moderation, if that makes any sense. The minute everyone can do this...
Excess in moderation.
The minute everyone can do this, it just loses the impact.
Well, we know so far, because of the fold receptors, that Hayate has them, Chuck doesn't. In fact, most people don't, right?
Right, right.
Yeah, we know that it's not going to be everyone. That's why it's going to come down to our hero.
True.
He's the chosen one.
All right, I've gone through the credits here, and I've got no idea who did that ship, so I'm not eating crow quite yet. I jumped the gun, but be interesting to see... If it comes out, you know, I'm sure when they release the settings documents at some point, it'll have a credit. So looking forward.
Not necessarily.
Well, we can hope.
Like who did they credit the like the Elint Seeker and stuff like that?
Well, what usually happens is you can just ask. You know, it'll be in interviews, and well, Kyle Moore is going to Anime Expo. Probably won't be able to ask that specific a question.
Oh, but, hell yes, you can. Gentlemen, this is your homework. Adrian, Renato.
Oh, my God.
You guys ask him, who designed the Protoculture artifact ship?
We'll ask him who designed the Elint Seeker as well.
All right.
Because I think it was Anno Hideaki now.
Really?
Yeah.
You mean now, as in it was credited to someone else previously, or...?
No, it was never credited that I recall. I can't remember any credit, but I know that... it wasn't Kawamori, or at least I think it wasn't Kawamori, and also I know it wasn't... I used to think it was Miyatake, but apparently not.
Hmm. Well, this whole wake scene, you know, ends with all the girls singing. It's all very nice. We go to credits. A second week in a row, we haven't had our regular ending. Just a shot of this wooden Valkyrie the kids have carved for Mesa floating in the ocean. And then we get the stinger.
Wait a second. Can I say one thing about that wooden Valkyrie?
Go for it.
Is it part of the design, or did they actually draw the little bullet hole in the middle of the cockpit?
Was that on there? I didn't know.
Because that's kind of morbid.
Wow. Okay.
And the kids made it, right?
Take a look at it.
Wow. No, okay, I'm looking at it now. It's, you know, the kids made it, right? And it's very Ragnan, I guess. Like, if you look at the protocultural runes, they got, like, that tribal stuff that's around
there.
Yeah,
the little symbols.
So, yeah. So, basically, the cockpit is yellow, and it's there's a sun like around the edge of the cockpit, and then in the middle of the cockpit there's a smaller sun. However, if you look at it and just if it's like brief, if you just because I'm pausing it so briefly, I mean that might have been an in joke or something like that. There's an actual design to it, but man, it's red and it's a big red dot right in the middle.
Bullseye.
That's exactly what I thought when I saw it. Yeah. Oh, man. Heart and soul.
So, this post-credits stinger, we jump to the garrison in orbit above Al Shahal. There's a warp, a fold signature, and...
How big of a fold?
According to this monitor, Adrian, it's huge. Mass huge. Surrounded by mass mids. I just love the fact that there is a rating for fold that is huge rating. I wonder what they would have rated Bedolza's fortress back in the day. But anyway, yeah, the Windermerians fold in near orbit of Al Shahal. The king orders Hines to sing, the entire garrison opens, and that's where it ends. So this huge battle that they've been, you know, kind of building up to with all this talk in the first half of the episode, it seems like we're going to be going straight into the center of it next week, and we'll be finding out whether Lady M's reinforcements arrive on time or not. Will this show us who Lady M is? Who knows? This is my main concern, to be honest, guys, and I may be jumping the gun here as I am want to, but there are so many mysteries left at this point in this show that we have yet to have, you know, solved. From character things like who Hayata's parents are, what the hell Mikomo is, what the real background to Freya is, to things like who Lady M is. There's just so much here that's left uncovered at this point. I feel intrinsically there's not enough time left in the series to cover all this ground, you know.
It's very well possible for some of those secrets we might never know.
That would be very Kyle Moore.
Flower Girl and Macross 7.
Well, we got a whole radio drama about her, and after that...
We still don't know who she is.
Well, she's immortal. She's in...
Okay, there's that.
But anyways, thoughts on the episode, guys. Mike, you want to jump in?
Sure, yeah. Well, like I said, aside from the info dubs, the beginning, once his wake started, that's pretty much got what the animators expected out of me, because, you know, even though with my limited Japanese, I'm watching it, but I mean, it's still very emotional. But you know, again, I was texting Adrian during the broadcast. I'm like, no, there's no body. I still see no body. So now maybe his body is just splattered and they didn't, you know, it'd be too gruesome to show. Cause there is there was obviously a casket, I mean, that was pretty final. So, and I'd mentioned on Twitter, last week, anybody who tuned out, after the first couple episodes, just cause they thought it was going to be like, you know, Sailor Moon with Valks, they've really missed out, because, these are probably some of the most, that was one of the most emotional deaths in the entire Macross franchise. I still hold to that. And the follow-up episode to that was really, you know, it was really good. I mean, I really liked the way that they did it. There's a very somber tone. So the series is pretty seamless, as it knows when to interject humor and lighthearted moments and like silly moments. And that's what, you know, Freya is usually good at, and with her crazy facial expressions and stuff like that. And the whole Maki Rei Rei thing, it's always nice too. But then at the same time, it knows when to get like, I hate to use this word, gritty. And then it also knows when to get serious and somber. I mean, and it really seamlessly moves between all those emotions. And it's really well done. So the pacing's great. This was a perfect episode to kind of reflect and kind of gather ourselves, because it looks like we're in for some action for the next one. So I really enjoyed it.
It did seem to be the lull before the storm, Mike. Although I do feel that I think Michelle's or Mihail's or however you want to say it in Frontier, I thought his death was a little more shocking because he was more fully realized as a character.
Yeah.
But Messes has been handled better in the aftermath, because it seems that, you know, they really know the fans need to kind of, you know, deal with it.
Yeah.
And they take time out to do it. And they did a little bit of that with Mihail in Fronty, but nowhere near as much. Like, you know, you got to see them committing his body rather ceremoniously into the fuel reactor, was it? Like, you know, the body becomes fuel for the ship.
Right.
And they committed him to the tank, such as it was. This time around, it was a lot more of a drawn out, more of a reflection. And I think it gave viewers that kind of catharsis that they needed. But before we move on, Mike, I've got to ask, what was the Machina Minute like for this episode?
There wasn't really a Machina Minute. I mean, she was sad. I wanted to comfort her and reach out and hold her and tell her it was going to be okay. But I can't pause or rewind or anything like that while it's going on. So is there anything specific that you're referring to that
at the beginning when they're analyzing Freya, twins are out for a walk, shall we say?
Yes, that's true. That is true. You know what? I was still so shaken up from last episode that it didn't register.
Wow. Plus,
I know. Plus, you guys, you do know that I wake up like at 6:15 in the morning just so I can I've got sleep in my eyes just so I can watch, you know, Delta live. So it's still, you know, I have to, usually it's not for like a couple, like one or two more rewatches that I catch stuff like that.
Fair enough.
But I'll have to go back and take a look.
So Renato, I know you've been generally overly positive about Delta to date. It seems like we've got this interesting curve happening, whereas the more positive you get about Delta, the more negative you get about Frontier. It's kind of an action reaction. But, you know, you've said on several occasions you like how it keeps mixing it up, keeping it fresh, keeping things moving forward. What was your take on this episode?
Yeah, I thought it was all right.
Thank you, all right.
Yeah.
Moving on.
That's it?
Well, it's just
thought he'd left the room for a sec there.
No, it's just an aftermath episode, really, right?
Right.
Just setting things up for the next one. Next one, of course. Oh, you're going to say the episode later, isn't it, I think.
Well, you can say it if you like.
It's called The King of the Wind, which kind of breaks the pattern of the episode titles being a kanji compound and then some katakana word.
Right.
So, King of the Wind is straight up English, with English grammar as well. So we haven't seen that before. So we know it's going to be a big one. This one is basically like the calm before the storm, because if you remember, again, the original Macross, we had that that kind of calm episode before episode 27, which was Aiwa Nagareru, Love Goes Away, Love Flows Away.
Right.
So the one before that is just really talky. It's Exodor being the messenger. And so this is kind of the same thing, right? They're sorting stuff out. They know that, we know that something big is coming because the Knights of the Wind are organizing their troops, and even the king is coming back to lead against the other guys. Wishes, whatever his name was. Glasses guy.
Lloyd.
Roy,
not Lloyd.
Yeah.
And seeing that the next episode is episode 12, if it's as we think it may be a two-core series, then this could be the mid-series cliffhanger, the big something or other next episode.
That's right, exactly. Right, so this is basically just the kind of calm episode they have before the mid-season thing. They did that for Macross 7 as well.
You know, I'm looking at the king on the bridge of his protocol to ship, the name of which they did say, and I'm completely blanking on it.
Shigeru Behrens, I guess, is about as good a way to pronounce it as any.
Okay.
Shigeru Behrens.
The SB. Mm-hmm. And he's on the bridge with some ceremonial headwear with, like, kind of wings stuck to his head, and I'm looking at it, and the first thing that sprang to mind was the character from My Hero Academia. I'm like, hey, he's doing an All Might. it looks kind of weird, but yeah. Anyways, Adrian, any thoughts?
My only thought is I'm just appalled by Mike's claim of how this is the one of the most emotional deaths and passings. When, I mean, obviously Dennis from Macross 2 is like the pinnacle of death.
Dennis!
Thank you, Renato. So, yeah.
Oh, man.
Not really much more to cover. Yeah, it was just the calm before the storm, maybe. Last week we kind of said, oh, there could be a new intro this episode. There wasn't. And they still had Messer in the beginning.
That's right, yeah.
So, you know, all that kind of, you know, speculation. I mean, even we do it to a degree.
Yeah.
But, you know, it could have been, like, the changing of the beginning episode, but it was the same. And do I think Messer's alive? I don't really know. I don't really care. As long as this story keeps going. But I can see, kind of, if they wanted to kind of, like, pull a fast one and say that they actually didn't kill him. But, I mean, he's obviously dead because he got a thing to the heart.
Mm-hmm.
Because they still got to flush out a spy, because I'm sure they don't just not think there's a spy there.
A spy?
Because remember the whole thing was about the spy, could be, well, like, Fred could be a spy. So.
Okay.
Could be a flushing out technique, but, I mean, that's pretty far-fetched. I'm just,
well, you know, it took there. Frontier two whole movies to flesh out the spy thing, even though they put it in the title of the first one.
But wait, you like the movies, Renato. I'm reminding you of this fact.
Thanks.
Yeah, it definitely did seem like we're building up to something here, and it's going to be very interesting to see where it goes. But, Egan, did you have any thoughts?
But this upcoming episode will be the first fleet-to-fleet battle we've had so far in the series, right?
No, it's fleet versus huge
fleet. Just like the first series. We've got to have the immense improbable odds against our heroes kind of thing.
But do we think that, you know, I've heard rumors about what's coming up within the next few episodes, and like the next four episode titles, well, we already know one of them, they all leaked, or not really leaked, they were revealed in a TV guide magazine, so we're getting a sense of what may potentially be coming, but I'm getting the feeling that, could there be a third party here? You know, because if they're bringing out the biggest gun in the Windermerian's arsenal and we're at episode 11, you get the feeling there's going to be a team-up like the original Macross at the end against a bigger threat.
We already have... No, like Japanese blogs have been pointing out, we already have a third party, being the Epsilon group. All of a sudden, this group appears out of nowhere from last episode, and now they've got the weapons and gear to take on all of the new UN.
They've got the technology to do all this. It's like, how much are they keeping for themselves, and what are they building up?
Because otherwise, it was just this one planet, and now we've got this conglomerate behind it.
That's a good point.
All right. Are they going to make out the Ultrasar people to be the real bad guys then? Is that what you're saying?
Or there could be a
like that burger guy.
There could be someone pulling the strings all along, and we have yet to find out. In fact, we know there are people pulling the strings. We don't know who they are. Lady M being one of them.
Mm.
We have no idea who is this Stone Belger Stone. Why does he have a stake in all of this?
Yeah,
it wouldn't surprise me if the big mid-season reveal was to save everyone in this fleet, we find out who Lady M is. And that could be a major game changer.
Because it could be so many people. Mm. So many people with the letter M.
So, over the last week, we've gotten quite a few questions, a couple of emails even from people wanting to know a bit more about some of the idle elements we've mentioned in the past. And Renato, I think we've decided it's probably best that would be a rather large discussion, long discussion. So, we're going to do it in a... if not a dedicated podcast, one that's not a Ger Talk. We'll do it in one of the regular speaker podcasts. Yeah. However, over the last week, a new type came out, and apart from the fact that, well, New Type and Anime Age both had major articles on Delta this month, one of which had a big picture of Messer looking rather Isamu-ish, just by the angle, and it clearly said KIA, basically, in his profile. So, Mike, I don't know if that shoots your theory down, but among other things, New Type had their top anime, top character poll, and Delta was ranked number one most popular anime. We had, what was it, 4 Delta females in the top 10 females, 1 Frontier female in the top 10 females, and 2 Delta male characters in the top 10 males. And it must be noted that Hayate and Freya took each of their respective categories number one spot. So that's number one across the board.
And the way these polls are done, they're taken in advance before the issue ship. So this is before what happened to Messer. Can you imagine what's going to be like in the next ratings?
So even then, Messer came in at number 9.
So by the next months, who knows?
So if Cat Ears will get you to number 9, Dying should get you pretty high. But
well, you know, he has 9 lives. He's down to 8.
He had ears, not a tail. Come on.
You don't know.
Oh, fan art will reveal that, I guess. But if this poll's anything to go by, you know, I've been talking to some friends and some Japanese fans actually today, and everyone was like, yeah, well, you know, as fans, we think it's great. You know, we know what's going on, but as far as a more general, you know, among anime fans at least, poll on popularity, especially given, as you said, Egan, that it was data that's a couple, you know, month out of date, no one was expecting it to poll this high. Everyone I know was quite surprised. Because the other characters and shows in that, the ranked in, you know, Kabaneri, you know, of course, with Mickey Mortal designs, and Osomatsu, you know, like, those are way bigger in, as far as, well, Osomatsu at least, as far as the public consciousness is concerned. And I see a lot more of Kabaneri being advertised on TV and in stores than I see Delta. So,
what anime was that, Quinn?
That was Kabaneri of the Iron Fortress, Mike.
Carbonelli?
I'm not hungry, thanks. You can dish some of that up for yourself. But I mean, Renato, what do you think about this?
Well, I think it ties into what we were saying before, that until we get these numbers that are finally starting to come in, we really can't tell either way, like, what's popular and what isn't. And so I'm glad for these questionnaires and reader surveys that they've been continuing for years, really. And I think I mentioned on Facebook or somewhere that, you know, these are quite interesting because it shows the popularity of the character. Like, even things like Nausicaa were popular, like, well into the 90s. She was number one, or at least in the top 5, for like a decade or two after the release of the original movie. So these are always very, very interesting and usually very surprising.
Right. And I'm just going to pull it up because I've got the magazine here. But having Cheryl still in those rankings was pretty eye-opening.
Yeah, that was weird.
So we had among
Did she drop out and then come back after Delta started airing?
That wouldn't surprise me because I've seen, if Twitter's anything to go by, quite a few people who are coming to Delta for the first time seem to be going back and watching Frontier, much as how a lot of people who came in with Frontier went back and watched 7.
Yeah.
So, in the top 10 female characters, we had Freya at number 1, Mirage at number 4, Mikomor at number 5. So, Mirage more popular than Mikomor, which I was surprised about, seeing Mikomor's naked every other episode. Cheryl hanging in there at 8, with Reyna in there at 9. So, I'm not seeing any Makina in there, Mike.
That's because the Japanese fans are clearly misguided.
All right. Thank you for clearing that up.
Yeah.
In the male category, we have Hayate at number 1 and then Messer down at number 9, which, well, you know, having 2 male characters in there, I was kind of surprised. I mean, I wasn't expecting Chuck or Arad to get in there. Maybe a Keith or a Royd, but not yet.
That's actually surprising. It's none of the Aerial Knights are there. Yeah.
Right. The purposefully designed pretty boy characters aren't ranking.
No kids. Bogue? No Bogue at all?
Well, I mean, Bogue's probably ranked so highly he's got his own child on the next page.
Excellent. Okay, that's good. Good to know.
Oh, I'm just going to say the Windermerians are dicks.
There's our podcast title right there. But yeah, it's been an interesting week. There's been a lot of small bits and pieces with Delta merchandise coming out recently. A lot of the gacha gacha, like the... What do we call gacha gacha in English? Is there a term for like the actual machine?
Capsule toy.
Just call them capsule toys.
Right.
Yeah.
They've had the little super deformed mobile phone straps of all the characters. And when I say all the characters, it's all of Walkure and two of the Aerial Knights and Hayate. And in a couple of areas where I know those machines are at, fans have told me they're completely empty. They're sold out. I found a couple today down at Kawasaki, so I grabbed a couple. There's also, in a couple of local arcades, they're doing, in the UFO catchers, the skill testers, they've got badges, like big badges with the, like, Messer's logo, his Reaper logo, things like that. And of course, the mini Shikishi art is still fairly available in places like Animate, as are those acrylic standees. But I found it interesting that the capsule toys are selling out in quite a lot of areas. And they are the very character-based, cute things that you can carry on you, have on your bag, have on your phone. The things that, you know, are affordable and that young fans would like. And they seem to be, you know, going pretty quick. Of course, they just announced these character pop stores, is it? I think they call them.
Oh, pop-up store, at least the one that was in Shibuya, right? The one that opened on Friday.
So one opened this Friday. There's one. The next one that will open will be down in Kawasaki. And then after that, there'll be one down in Kyoto. But Egan, you dropped by there. I haven't been yet. But what did they have? What was it like?
It was smaller than what we saw earlier in the Shinjuku pop-up shop.
Yeah, Oshare.
That's right. That's the one. And what they did have, like those acrylic figures, they had everyone available except for Freya. Freya was completely gone. So you can, if you are considering, well, as we can see from the character pose, who people are snapping up, Freya is. And everyone else is still readily available. They had some of those Aerial Knights wiping cloths, and they show mock-ups.
Excuse me?
I'm not sure what
Aerial Knight wiping cloths.
Whatever you might be wiping with, I'm not going to ask. And
right. The microfiber towels, I believe.
There you go.
And you've made a messer of yourself.
Wipe the blood off you. You're already dead.
And then they show mock-ups of the 172 scale Bandai plastic models, including the clear one, which will be available if you buy all of the available Blu-ray volumes. You get a clear version of the VF-31 that Hayate pilots, including in the back, there's a little figure of Freya in her pilot, you know, her G-suit. And... yeah.
Well, I don't even build models, but I guess I'll end up with that at some point.
Yeah, you have to order it from Bandai.
Is that, well, I thought it was you have to, you probably get the coupons or something. You then
send it in? Yeah. Oh, I thought it was a Bandai,
the web store? Yeah.
I mean, you have to, but I think it works like the Bandai Visual Club, the Bandai Motion Club. You have to just register each volume. I don't know. I haven't checked. That's what I
think. Well, a lot of retailers are doing this, that if you order and buy all of the Blu-rays from this particular retailer will provide some sort of goodie. Amazon does it, Gamers does it, I think Tsutaya has got one as well, and they're all different. So basically, if you want to get them all, you have to buy all 9 really overpriced Blu-ray discs at least 5 times.
Yeah, not happening.
From the different retailers.
Not happening for us, but there are some... people, there are some real diehard fans out there.
I know that one of the stores has already like a wall scroll announced. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen anything announced by Amazon. I'm not sure if they're doing it this time.
Yeah, Amazon. No, they are. Amazon is what is it? Some illustration or a frame or something. The description is rather confusing, at least for me. Like it's a frame. It's an original illustration frame or something like that.
Okay. Well, I'll probably be going with Amazon just because. It's a good 2,000 yen cheaper per volume, and you don't have to go anywhere to pick them up.
No, because that's only for the Amazon exclusive release. You got to buy all Amazon exclusive releases to get that thing, and that's of course they're not gonna downprice that.
No, they did. So last week they dropped the price
of the Amazon exclusive one or of the regular Amazon one.
Of the Amazon exclusive one, yeah. Yeah, I double checked it last week. I was waiting for the discounts to kick in, and they finally have.
Let me check it right now because I don't believe you.
Go ahead. Checked last week. But yeah, so the store was fairly minimal at this point, what you're saying.
Fairly minimal, possibly because, like I mentioned with Freya, selling out some of the stuff, even after 2 days, have already been snatched up already. Same thing happened at the Oshare place towards the end. There was the most popular stuff, particularly of the Valkyrie girls, were just gone.
Interesting. Well, that's what happens when you rank number one on a new type poll, I guess.
Oh, I will say this, that Friday night, I had a DJ gig, and after my set at midnight, I went out to get some ramen. So I went out, was eating ramen in the shop, and they had, like, the radio going, and the opening song came on.
Nice.
Yeah,
I've been noticing that more recently, because you were talking about that before, and early on, we weren't hearing the music yet. In the past couple of weeks, I've been hearing more in like regular stores and anime stores and model shops. We've been hearing more of the Valkyrie music.
I guess now that the single's out, they have a way to play it. And I noticed on the weekend, it being the weekend now, yesterday, I dropped by Akihabara after work. And I know in, it was either Animate and or Tora no Anna.
Yeah, the thing is, I was in Shimokitazawa, which is not anime related at all. It's all like college music and food and bohemian clothing kind of stuff. And I was just in a ramen shop, and it was just a regular radio station that was probably playing like Taylor Swift and whatever Exile song was after that. And I was just ignoring all of it, and then all of a sudden, you know, Playing Inside You came on, and I was just
Playing Inside You came. Okay,
Ichidake no koi nara. Thank you.
Okay. Can I just go back a little bit? I've got Amazon, right?
Yep.
So there's two. There's the regular Macross Delta 0101 with the live ticket, raffle ticket thing inside. Blu-ray, it's 6,265 reduced from 8,424 right now.
All right, you got to tell me that's the one I'm looking at.
Yeah, and then there's the Amazon.co.jp limited edition, which is the same thing, except it says Shinki Kakeoroshi Irasto Shio A4 Tokusei Frame, right? Which means that it's an A4 sized original illustration frame if you buy all of the Amazon exclusive things. And that one is still 8,424. And they're not going to reduce it because it's exclusive to Amazon. Why would they?
All right, I stand corrected. When I searched for limited edition, the only one that came up last week was the reduced one. But obviously, look, my bad. But yeah, that means then that at a 2,000 yen premium per volume, that is actually a 18,000 yen A4 frame.
Yeah, you can probably get it for less than that if you buy it secondhand.
Exactly, exactly. I know, I've got about $600 worth of Amazon points lying around, so that's my Delta fund, pretty much. So I'll be going for whatever's the cheapest option, I think. But which one are you going with, Renato?
Just a regular one.
I mean, which, like, a particular outlet, like retailer or Amazon or...
I ordered just the regular one on Amazon because it was the cheapest one so far.
Did anybody else think that in the barbecue scene tonight when they're like, I mean...
Oh, man, were you going morbid on that?
Because they carried the bag in and like Chuck was like touching the fire. Did you not think the meerkat was in the bag? I totally was like,
yes, I thought that.
Exactly. So did I. Yeah,
I was like, they finally got that seven.
Like they caught him and they're gonna roast him in Mess's honor. How awesome is that?
And then I figured, because like, you know, Huck and Zuck bring it in, right? And they're holding it up like, oh, like we got it. And like Chuck's tending the fire, like, yeah, we're gonna cook this sucker now. And I figured that's when, obviously, Hayate would be like, no, we gotta let him go, blah, blah, blah. Can't kill something because somebody just died.
But instead, we got banana sake.
Yeah,
actually, not bad.
Not a bad substitute.
It may have been kind of morbid to think that the sea cat was in there, but at least we didn't think that Messer was in there.
That's what I was just about to say, Renato. Is like, oh, I thought it was Messer's body for like 5 seconds. I really did. I was just like, oh my god, are they gonna do like a Viking funeral or something and put him out to sea, or what are they doing?
No, they're gonna dump it in the ocean, like all like really discreet and stuff, because you know the captain was dressed like a gangster.
Well, and then the jellyfish feed off the body, and that's how they generate the power to make those little heart symbols
and float into the air.
That's right,
of human flesh.
While we're on back onto that, I just wanted to mention
human flesh?
That because we're always talking about that. But I was just talking with Sarah about how that whole played out. And she, even though she liked it, even though she was getting sniffly at the towards the end, there was a couple lines in there that she said, her watching so much anime, she would, like to see it better, less, cliched. But I'd rather have her come on another podcast.
So you're telling me Sarah's watching, she's telling you about it, but she's not joining us this evening?
She has to sleep. She's like the rest of us, I know.
Lack of dedication. It's priorities. All right. Yeah. On that note, shall we close it out tonight? Mike, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Mike in Redlands, and you can either find me tweeting about lately it's been Macross or Silicon Valley or Office Space or American Football.
Office Space.
Find me there.
Office Space, the movie?
Silicon Valley and Office Space are made by both made by Daniels. Mike Judge.
Oh, Mike Judge.
Mike Judge, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, Renato, you just got back from a con, right? You did a panel and...
Yeah, I went to the A-Con. I didn't do a panel. It was more of a... Because there's a separate section, which is an academic conference. So this is the Fandom and Neo Media Studies Conference. At A-Con. Okay. In Dallas.
Yeah. All right. So
what do you want to say?
I was going to say there's no Macross connection, but people...
There is a lot of Macross connection, actually, because my talk was about science fiction debates that happened in 1981 or so, and Studio Nue is at the center of it. So it's more focused on Gundam and a little bit of shoujo manga, but Macross is part of it, just with the Studio Nue connection.
Because they were fanboys back then, yeah.
Would you be interested in maybe us recording a version of that, like, or you discussing it with us for a cast or another?
Yeah, I'll discuss it.
Cool. All right, sounds good. And Renato, not Renato, Egan, you're being mysterious as always.
Oh, I just wanted to put in, I'm glad the worst thing that I was worried about this episode didn't happen. When you watch the first Macross series, the first major death we had was Roy Fokker. We didn't get a funeral scene episode right after that. We got another death right afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
I was worried. We're like, I was thinking, are we taking bets on who's going to go next?
Who did you think it was going to be?
Golly, we were dreading someone like Kaname might have been.
Not Chuck.
Oh. Oh, he wouldn't have been the Kakizaki, would he?
Yeah, exactly.
Chuck is the Kakizaki, yeah.
He flies better than Kakizaki.
That's true. That's
Chuckizaki.
He hasn't been shot down.
I thought we'd get the cat, the mercat death, so we didn't get that either. And Adrian, is there anywhere people can find you?
They can find me on Twitter, at GiantRobo, and I usually tweet about Mike, the dog face, and...
I'll kill you.
starting to tweet a little bit more now that I'm actually going to be heading over to Anime Expo at the end of this month. Again, yay. Most of all the speaker podcasts will be there.
It's amazing. Lucky sons of Grr.
Yeah,
Gwen, why don't you just come and hang out?
Some of us have work, man.
Nobody will notice.
I wish I was recording. Oh, wait.
You are.
Yeah. Yeah, because like if you go there, like you won't have time to tweet.
Exactly.
And Facebook. Spam on
exactly.
Twitter.
Exactly. So speaking of spamming on Twitter, people can find my spam. It's Gwyn Campbell, capital G, capital C, where you'll find me retweeting only the finest Japanese fan art for Delta and everything else Delta related and a lot of Carbonelli stuff and just anime stuff in general. If you want to contact the podcast, as people have been, you can contact us at speakerpod@gmail.com or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And we try to get back to anyone who gets in touch with us. We've been a little bit slow on the replies last week. I apologize. We all had kind of work deadlines, so everyone's been really busy. But if you've been in touch, we will address any questions in a future podcast. So please do keep listening. On that note, on this cliffhanger, waiting for this big battle to happen next week, this is the Gurr Talk from Speaker Podcast, holding out.